listeners. My name is Arush Naveed, and you're listening to the Slice of Orange, North Orange County podcast. Slice of Orange is a podcast that dissects politics in North Orange County. This election season, our team will interview candidates on NOC's ballot, explain propositions and ballot measures, and discuss general election trends. Our goal is to increase civic knowledge in the public and introduce you to ways of getting involved. My name is Arush Naveed, and I am your host for the day. Today, I'm interviewing Nick Dunlap, current mayor of Fullerton. Voters will be choosing between Jan Flory and the incumbent Nick Dunlap for District 2. All right, Mayor Dunlap, or should I say Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
So, Nick, let's start with some of our basic questions. What have you learned serving in local office thus far?
You know, I think what's really interesting about serving at the local level is that you hear from the people that are on, you know, sort of either side of the political spectrum, right? You hear from the left, you hear from the right. And I think oftentimes it's those folks, their blogs, their social media posts, and even some of the comments that are made in person at council meetings that tend to be the loudest. But what I've found, you know, not just campaigning for, you know, my initial term in office, but as I'm out now knocking on doors and talking to people, you know, it's great to see that most people are just right in the middle of the road and they just expect the basics out of local government. And so I use that as motivation to really do the best job I can serving my peers, my neighbors, my friends, my family. And it's really a great honor, you know, having been born and raised here in Fullerton.
Absolutely. What a great lesson that you shared there. So if you could also discuss, you know, you've been in office, I'm sure you've done a lot of stuff that you can share with us, and we'll talk about that later. But you know, there's these accomplishments that a person really, you know, feels proud of. So what would you say your top three accomplishments were while you have been in office?
The thing that's really interesting is we look at sort of the past 4 years and what the city has been through. There's really a number of different things that we've been able to accomplish. And truly, you know, no one individual council member can, you know, point to, hey, I did this or I did that. I mean, sure, there are a few things and, you know, maybe we could talk about some of those later. But I think really, as I look at it, you know, kind of what I set out to do, you know, was kind of something that's still necessary, right? We wanted to invest in our roads and streets to, you know, to update and upgrade our infrastructure. And, you know, we were able to invest over $50 million over the last 4 years, which is more than any other council has done in the last two decades. So we've got a record investment in our roads and streets. Now, obviously, there's still work to do and it's still a priority. So that's something I'll continue to focus on. I think it's great that we've been able to, you know, do things like reopen the Hunt Branch Library. As somebody who was an English major in school and I love reading, you know, I think this is something that's just a treasure for our community. And it's something that I'm very excited about being reopened, restored, and sort of revitalized for, you know, for our community, you know, for today and for years to come. And I'm also excited about some of the cultural things that we've been able to do. You know, it seemed like, in my view, right, growing up in Fullerton, we know a lot about our city's roots and our city's history, whether that's, you know, through music with Fender guitars or, you know, sort of the punk rock epicenter of the early 1980s that really started here, not just in our city, but at my high school, at Troy High School. And so, you know, we were able to recognize Mike Ness, the founder of Social Distortion, earlier this year. And that was a great event that saw over, you know, about 2,000 people come into our downtown area for the day to celebrate. And it was great to see not just what Fullerton, you know, kind of is today, but what it represents to all of those folks who live here, who grew up here, and who do business here. You know, it's a really special place. And I think as a council member serving the community, that's something that I take great pleasure in, right, is being able to, you know, to recognize our great legacy and our, you know, sort of our history, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the top three that, you know, just to summarize were, you know, record investments on roads and streets, reopening and restoration of the Hunt Library branch, which I think has been, you know, that's been going on for years. And we finally get to step foot into the library, as well as, you know, children and families to get to utilize it again. And then the third one, you know, kind of this emphasis on our history of Fullerton, our local history, our cultural history. So those are great. Thank you for sharing those. You know, you've had this run in local government thus far, and you are running again. What is, you know, kind of your major encouragement for running again for the seat?
You know, that's a great question. There's a couple of things I think that drive me. I think for one, it's a vision for our city, and it's an understanding of kind of our roots, who we are, and where we've been. But also, you know, the idea of, hey, what our city can be, right? And some of these, you know, sort of intrinsic features and details or nuances, right, to our city that, you know, like you think about and you look ahead to see, hey, what can we do to, you know, purpose this asset for the future, right? Like, I'll give you an example. We've got, you know, we're one of only a few cities in California to have our own municipal airport. And, you know, it's largely, it's a general aviation airport, and, you know, there's some event space and other, you know, other things going on there, but by and large, I mean, it suits, or serves mostly folks who are, you know, kind of aviation enthusiasts who fly in and out of there on a daily, weekly basis, you know, but as we look ahead to the future, we've had discussions with, you know, with Boeing and Wisk and some of these other, proven, you know, right, companies and names, but newer technologies who are looking at things like last mile transport to figure out how we can get from, you know, hey, the Fullerton Airport to LAX, right? And, you know, so we look at that and we look at, okay, what that could do for the city's revenue in terms of, you know, not just parking income at the airport, but also tax dollars for the tickets that are sold and for the passengers that could potentially be going in and out of the Fullerton Municipal Airport at some point in the future, you know, to get to a bigger, you know, perhaps national or international flight out of LAX, you know, and with the way some of this technology is positioning itself, it's going to be competing with comparable to like an Uber Black or something to that effect. So I think that's one example, but I think there's other examples too, with respect to sort of commercial retail and other land use where, you know, it's having the ability to, you know, sit down, not just with the city staff, but also with property owners and developers who come to the city and explaining to them, hey, the vision and the need for, you know, particular retail, grocery, or other such locations in our city, and being able to kind of explain why this is, you know, why this is important to a community or a neighborhood, and really go the extra mile to make sure that Fullerton is getting the extra look or the last look after somebody is maybe looking at, say, North Orange County and looking at other cities like, you know, La Habra, Placentia, Brea, you name it. So I think that's really, for me, what drives me, right? It's the fact that I'm a third generation Fullerton resident, raising my own kids here. I own a business here. You know, obviously, you know, my family and I are stakeholders here in the community, and we have, you know, really a passion and a vision about what we hope to see in our city. And so, you know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, that my wife supports it as well, because it's a lot of time away from, obviously from her, and I have two young daughters. So there is quite the compromise, but you know, I think we're all bought into sort of the bigger vision for our city. And that's really what drives me.
Right. That is, you know, the opportunity cost there of being a public official while also having a full-time career. And then obviously juggling that with family, you know, that's always one of the more fascinating aspects of serving in local government too. So I appreciate you bringing that up actually. So, you know, you share some of your priorities and some of the things that you're most proud of, but I also want to ask you if, and when reelected, what would be your top three priorities policy-wise?
So I think it's continuing, excuse me, first and foremost, I think we need to continue to focus on growing our economy. I think it's great that we have about $2.5 billion in projects underway in our city right now. I mean, and this is money from outside of our city, private capital being invested in our city, you know, from owners, developers, and others who believe in our city, right? And so I think that's a good sign that things are on the you know, that things are headed in the right direction. So I think we need to continue to grow our economy through retail and commercial uses. You know, and obviously these real estate projects, once they are online, will help to generate a greater tax base for our city as well. So that's also exciting. And I think the other thing, we need to continue to focus on roads and streets. I mean, that also is critical. So I think we need to continue to be aggressive, competing for, you know, county, state, and federal funds that are available for roads and streets. That's actually something I've been able to do this year, working together with, you know, some of our state legislators, working also with our grant writers, and also you know, with our member of Congress, you know, Congresswoman Michelle Steele. you know, we've been able to aggressively pursue earmarks and additional funding. And that's part of what has driven, you know, this significant reinvestment in our roads and streets, right? It's well beyond time, I think, that we made that investment. And so that's something that we'll continue to focus on. And then I also think with today, kind of crime rates on the rise really nationwide, but also I think what people see in the news and hear about, you know, what's going on in the city and county of Los Angeles, I think, you know, public safety remains a concern. And naturally, that's job one for local government. And so we need to continue to, you know, focus on funding our police and fire resources as best we can.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing those. So now I want to get more into some of the specific questions that we've kind of rounded up from the various different, you know, city council issues that have come up, controversies, if you will. So these are going to be, you know, kind of across a variety of topics, but let's get into it. So many Fullertonians, they lack the faith and trust in their police as a result of killings that have happened, right? So 13 years ago, there was the Kelly Thomas murder. This year, Alejandro Campos Rios. So do you have faith in the current police chief's ability to change the culture and policy of that department? You know, what are kind of your thoughts and ideas on this?
Well, I think I will say I kind of disagree with or reject the notion that many people do not have faith in the police department. I think some do not have faith in the police department. And, you know, to draw the parallels between, you know, what happened during the Kelly Thomas incident and, you know, some of the, I guess, this most recent incident, I think are really night and day. I think that the police department has made significant improvements since, you know, the Kelly Thomas incident. And I think that part of that, what I think is, I think what's really interesting about that is that, you know, with our new chief, Chief John Radis, it's interesting because he's got the ties to the, you know, obviously the old department, right? So he has that sort of institutional knowledge of kind of the darkest days of our city's police department. And so I think it's great for a new leader like him, a young leader like him, who has the, you know, kind of the energy and the, certainly the appreciation of the job to go out to, you know, talk and meet with the community, to listen to people, to take the meetings. And I think that really, that resonates with the community. And I will tell you, as I talk to people, you know, one of the more common concerns or requests that I get from the public is, hey, we need to do more. We need to put more police officers on the street, you know, and we need more for and from our police department.
Right. So it's more about, you know, the variety of needs within the community for the police department and kind of looking at it a bit more holistically outside of these bigger incidents that have happened. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So now I want to talk a little bit about city staff and affordability and pay, you know, issues of this nature. So let's talk about pensions first. So pensions, they're a huge obligation for city government budgets, and many cities, they have outsourced staff and services. So first, what is your position on that trend? You know, where do you think there are cost savings? And then second, are you in favor of increasing city staff? Why or why not?
Well, I think we need to look at those staffing levels, right? And I think we've got within our budget right now, there are a number of open positions. And I think if you look back over the past 3 to 4 years, you would see that that we have, in fact, not only increased the budget, but also put pressure on various city managers, both interim and permanent, like we have now, you know, to fully staff their departments in order to better serve the community. At the end of the day, you know, I think that's what's most important to note about all of this is that it's the residents and business owners who suffer as a result of some of these, you know, these staffing shortages or staffing issues. And I think, so to that point, one thing I would say, you know, throughout the past year and a half, we've made it a point to put much of our permitting online. And so today you can apply online for over 95% of the permits that you will need to either, you know, build an ADU, to open a business, to complete, like, you know, tenant improvements at a commercial or office building, or even to build a new structure on a property that you own altogether. So that's 95% of the work that can be done online via a computer, or, you know, it's your home or office, which is more than Newport Beach, and it's more than Irvine, and more than Santa Ana, and more than Anaheim. And so, I think those are ways that we can continue to invest and improve our online infrastructure to better serve the community. And then, you know, as opportunities come up to outsource some of those items where it'll better support city staff and perhaps improve or enhance, you know, the response time and ultimately the deliverables to the public, then I would be in favor of looking at those things. I think it's very difficult simply to say that, hey, by outsourcing, you're going to save costs and get better results, because I think you ultimately have to weigh the two. You know, it's not just the cost savings. It's also, sort of the opportunity cost of like, okay, well, there's a cost savings and, you know, we were able to improve or enhance the results to the end user. Right. So that's, I think, really important to weigh in all of that as well. Another thing you touched on, you know, sort of at the onset of the question, was related to pensions. And quite honestly, you know, there's not a whole lot that the city can do, considering, pensions are really governed by the state. And so you're absolutely right. Much of our current budget is allocated to law enforcement. Frankly, it's over 51-52% of our city budget. And most of that budget is not going to current, you know, salaries and benefits, it's going to pensions, right? So, that's really something that, the city or the state obviously put the city in a tough spot there. And it's not just Fullerton that's feeling the pinch. It's many other cities across the state.
Right. It's just a much bigger problem than just our city. So the next question is also in the similar lines of affordability and pay. So city employees, teachers, other workers, there's been kind of this longstanding issue of Fullerton's pay being pretty low for our city employees. And housing is something that's, again, that's a nationwide problem, really, especially in our state. But, you know, our homes in Fullerton, are they affordable to our city employees? Are they not? How have you been addressing this issue? How will you continue to address this issue?
Yeah, I think housing is an interesting topic. Obviously, since I've been on council, I think we've had several housing projects. Both we've had, you know, a number of conventional apartment projects that have been presented, and ultimately through various meetings with community groups and other stakeholders, these projects were able to be approved. We've also had some residential for sale, you know, product or single family homes or detached homes that have come forward. And again, through a similar process, you know, with meetings with community members, were approved. And we've also had affordable housing, right? We've got Point Commons that's going in down on West Commonwealth, which is the first actually, you know, purpose built affordable housing complex in the city in the time that I've been on council. And really the first, you know, several years, I think, going back to, there's a project off of Lemon that's also affordable, but that's probably been 7 or 8 years now since that broke ground and has been serving the community. So I think, you know, Fullerton, again, not unlike other cities across our state, is grappling with this issue. And I think that rather than fight the state over some of these mandates, you know, we've tried to push back where we can and preserve the quality of life that Fullerton residents have come to know, love, and expect, while also, you know, kind of balancing these mandates, right, and trying to figure out where, you know, we can zone and plan for additional units in the future to help to help address some of those housing affordability challenges that are facing, you know, not just Fullertonians, but Americans nationwide.
Right. So now I want to move on to this issue that has been coming up a lot in the past few city council meetings, precisely in more specifically in the public commons. And for context, during the pandemic, our Wiltshire Street, part of it was closed down to provide the businesses there to kind of expand onto the street and have tables out there so people could dine safely. And that slowly became Walk on Wilshire. Now, as that agreement kind of comes to an end officially with the city, Walk on Wilshire will soon be going away. And, you know, the street will be converted back into what it originally was, which was for driving, for cars. So, however, in the midst of this, a group, Save Walk on Wilshire, has kind of come up, and they are advocating to actually keep this. And they have done petitions and they have done surveys and interviews. And there seems to be a pretty large, you know, group that kind of supports this. There seems to be kind of overwhelming support for it, right? Both in the public comments and kind of outside of it too. There are events happening and such as well. So what are your thoughts on pedestrianized areas in downtown Fullerton, such as the Walk on Wilshire? And are you in favor of expanding open space in the city?
Yeah, absolutely in favor of expanding open space in the city. You know, we reopened the West Coyote Hills Trail. We've renovated and revamped several parks in the city. And we've also kind of, you know, led the charge in terms of, you know, reopening and renovating several other parks in the city, you know, notably UP Park and Independence Park as well. With respect to the Walk on Wilshire, you know, what I think it's important to note, I did recuse myself from that vote, not because there's a direct conflict. You know, I actually cleared with our city attorney and, you know, a separate attorney who I spoke to about the issue. But because I think I do think this will probably head down a path that results in some sort of legal consequences or action either with or involving the city. But I recuse myself because, you know, in the early 90s, my dad, along with some of his partners, actually acquired the Villa del Sol building, which is on the corner of Harbor and Wilshire. And I've got no affiliation to him or his company, but they continue to manage it to this day. And so just, you know, I did not want to be caught in the middle of something, especially when I do think, I mean, I will say, I certainly can see, you know, the concerns from, you know, from both groups, right, on both sides. But ultimately, I mean, I think if it were me, I think that a great compromise would be making it a, you know, sort of seasonal, you know, at least this is pertaining to the Walk on Wilshire. I think sort of a seasonal approach where it maybe opens around Memorial Day and it reopens after Labor Day. And that gives the city an opportunity to program events and other things, you know, for that location. And it also gives, you know, the restaurants, it makes it more of a draw, right? It brings more people to downtown Fullerton, which is, I think, what everybody in our city wants, you know, not just the restaurant owners and business owners, but, you know, sort of, you know, the other folks in the community as well want to be able to, you know, enjoy the benefits of having more people in our downtown spending money in downtown. It's good for everybody. So now, having said that, it was born out of the pandemic. And I think initially when those, you know, when that was created, it was intended to be temporary. And so as part of that, like, I mean, we've gone through this recently where right-of-ways were vacated at the city and there are public hearings that are required. And so there are a number of different, I think, you know, steps that need to take place if that were actually to become permanent, which, again, it was always intended to be, you know, at least as I understood it, sort of temporary in nature, right? So my hope is that they can figure something out that's a fair balance because, you know, just like I've heard from the members of the community that support it, you know, I've also heard from, you know, the business and property owners who, you know, have seen their vehicular traffic and drive-by activity, you know, really plummet. And as a result of that, you know, they're selling less plates of food, they're selling less cups of coffee. And as a result of that, like, they're feeling the pinch on their own budget. So I think, you know, it's important sometimes to really, I think, kind of weigh the totality of the situation together and then try to make the best determination that you can for the city. So we do need more spaces like that. I think downtown Fullerton is, you know, probably, you know, one of the most special places in all of Orange County. And I think it's a great thing being able to eat outside. So my hope is that they can figure something out that works for everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. So another issue that has come up in the past few years is the mayor rotation process. So I want to ask you, you know, what do you think of the mayor rotation process in the city council over the past few years? And would you change it if and when reelected, or would you keep it the same?
You know, we had this debate, I think, earlier this year, and I think as you noted, I mean, over the past 3 to 4 years, it hasn't followed the rotation. And there were years past as well where it didn't follow the rotation either. I think as I look at this and I see the rotation, in my view, I think it's really important for a council member to be able to get the support of their fellow council members. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on, not just in council meetings, but behind the scenes. And I think it's telling that certain members of our council cannot get the additional support needed to earn that role, because, you know, it's largely ceremonial, but, you know, it does have some official roles and responsibilities as well. And I think from that standpoint, you know, a little goes a long way in trying to, you know, work with and be collegial and get along with fellow council members. And I've tried to make that effort across the board, you know, as a council member. And, you know, there's times where we deal with contentious issues, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we, you know, have to trust that we all want the best for the city, and that, you know, ultimately we are all working towards what we believe is a similar, like the similar greatest outcome for the city, right? Just in different ways. And so, you know, my view is that, you know, keep an open mind and, you know, hope that people maybe kind of, you know, maybe act differently or conduct themselves differently, and they get a chance to do that.
Thank you for explaining that. So another one of the issues that has kind of come up, although not as seriously as some of the previous ones that I've mentioned, is about appointing folks to serve on city commissions, right? So one of the council members' direct powers is appointing residents to serve on city commissions, which are volunteer positions. And do correct me if I'm wrong on any of these details. So how would you ensure representation for our city's advisory commissions if and when reelected?
Well, I think we've been able to do that by, I've, you know, made it a point to promptly fill any commission openings that I've been able to appoint directly for. And then also some of the at-large positions, which, you know, we haven't had any yet this year. I think we may have a few coming up on the youth and senior commissions. But, you know, trying to fill those as quickly as we can in order to get the committees together so that they can meet and they can start to, you know, start to serve and listen to the community. So I think it's important, but it's also something that's largely, you know, endemic to how kind of the city committee process works, right? You have to be a Fullerton resident. You've got to, and, you know, there's just kind of the different boxes that you have to check and the different steps that you have to, you know, kind of follow in order to apply and ultimately get approved. But, you know, I think we've been able to ensure that at least, you know, I can say, speak for myself, that I think I've got some good, you know, really volunteer community minded people who are out there trying to do what's best for the community. Because, you know, you figure, it's not just, I mean, you've got the planning commission, you've got the infrastructure review committee, you've got the parks and rec commission, you've got the active transport committee, the community development block grant committee. There's so many different ways to get involved. And each of those groups and each of the volunteers is spending a lot of time reading the materials, asking questions of staff, and then getting to a point where they can participate in a meeting where, you know, really for the first time in public, they're discussing this with fellow committee or council or commissioners, right? So there's a lot of work that goes into it. I had the opportunity to serve on the planning commission before I was on council, and I know that was a great experience. We had a number of different contentious meetings. But I think it was an opportunity not just to, you know, to serve the community, but to also listen to and hear different public testimony, which I think is always very compelling. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, I might think I have an opinion on something, and, you know, you hear something in public comments where you think, wow, that was really thoughtful and that really resonated. You know, they're not all insults and, you know, antagonizing comments, right? A lot of times there's good, valid feedback. And I think it's important to, we listen to it all, but the good points really resonate.
Right, right. Now you have mentioned this already about how this is about community involvement. So my next few questions actually are about that. So because of the pandemic and various other reasons, you know, people have really disconnected from local communities, you know, across the board, across the nation, across the world. But we have also noticed this pattern in Fullerton, right? So how do you plan on meeting with constituents and being available if and when you are reelected? And to actually add on to that, I also want to ask, you know, specifically with young folks who don't necessarily know exactly how city council works. They might not even know about who the representatives are. What ways would you interact with them? And also, what advice do you have for them to get involved?
Well, that's a great question. And so I think first things first, you know, about the youth, I will say, it's funny, just on the way over here tonight for the interview, I met with, I got a call from a friend of mine who, you know, his daughter has served through, you know, sort of the National Charity League, and she's been a Girl Scout, and she's going off to college, but was looking to have one last community event, you know, at a parks facility in our city, and was basically asking if I could help, you know, the city put something together for her, you know, basically get the venue or something to that effect. And so, I say that only because there are so many ways to serve our community that are both, you know, if you want to call it official, by meaning it's on a committee or on a commission, there are those opportunities at the city. But, you know, there's also sort of the unofficial or the other community groups, right? Like Fullerton has so many great charity minded groups. Like when you think about it, we've got obviously the, you know, the Rotary, we've got, you know, the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, we've got, you know, the Elks, Lions. I mean, there's so many different groups that serve our community that raise money, you know, to try to give back to our community. And so you could be involved in those committees, right? Or those groups, you could get on the board of directors there to serve through the nonprofit community. But then alternatively, you can apply or get appointed to, you know, one of the city committees, right? Whether that's the Parks and Recreation Committee, the Planning Commission, Active Transport, Community Development Block Grant. And then of course, there's running for council, right? And I think what's really important, and as I talk to folks today about this, I think there's really a big disconnect. And I don't know whether it has to do with the internet, but I see this across like trade groups and other trade associations as well. And we also see it with, you know, with churches. And the interesting thing is it's like across denominations that people are just not getting involved and taking leadership and volunteer roles anymore, you know. And I think part of it is the internet, right? Like especially from some of the advocacy groups, I think people get the idea that, hey, information is available online. There's really no need to join and participate. You know, whether it's local government, you know, people have their own ideas about national politics. And that's actually, we'll circle back to that because that's a myth I'd like to dispel later. But I think what's really important is ultimately at the end of the day, you know, there are people who will sit at home and complain and, you know, really whine about, hey, the city isn't doing this, or the community doesn't have this, or this is something. And yet they'll never get off the couch to volunteer for a committee or a commission, right? They'll never write a letter. They'll never come to public comments to speak about something that affects or impacts them. And so I think that's what's really important, is that, you know, we need to reinstill in our community the importance of, you know, really speaking up for yourself and to advocate for yourself or your community. I mean, it's really the essence of our democracy, right? Is our free voice and our ability to, you know, to speak our beliefs. And so I think that's something that's really important. And I try to teach that again. I've got two little girls, and as we've toured both of their Girl Scout troops and other community groups through, you know, council chambers and city hall, that's one of the things that I try to, you know, really stress upon them, is the importance of getting involved, getting active, and speaking up for what's right and speaking up for your rights, you know, because who knows better about, you know, your part of town, your street, your neighborhood, than you, right? At the end of the day. And so I think that's one thing that's really important is, you know, I talk to adults today that don't necessarily understand that dynamic, right? Who, you know, people that, you know, have this idea that, well, I'm sure if I looked at the street conditions in your neighborhood, they're great. I say, no, actually, they're not great. And, you know, my kids can't run or ride their bikes, you know, through the street because I'm worried about, you know, potholes and busted sidewalks, right? So, you know, you explain to people how things work and you get people to get involved and get engaged. And I think ultimately our community is better because of that. And actually, I think, you know, I want to say, gosh, I don't know that this figure is 100% accurate, but I remember at the time we went through the last cycle of redistricting, which was probably, gosh, 2.5-3 years ago, maybe. I talked to the consultant that handled these meetings, because the city of Fullerton had a number of community meetings. And what they said was that we had more at each of our meetings than Anaheim had at all of their meetings combined. And I thought, how funny is that, that a city, you know, our city is maybe, you know, 2.5 times the size of Anaheim, right, from a population perspective. And yet there was more civic engagement involved in this process from Fullerton. So, you know, I think that's really a testament to, you know, kind of to Fullerton's community advocacy and strength there. So, sorry, that's kind of a long-winded answer, but I guess my thing is, hey, it doesn't have to be a city commission. There's plenty of ways to get involved in your community. And I think the most important thing is just to do it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of great points about how we aren't as not involved as we need to be, but at the same time, Fullerton is somehow doing better. So, you know, lots of great lessons to be learned. But if, say, you know, you meet somebody who's young and say they're in high school or college and they want to get involved in local government, what is like the first step you'll give them, you know, go and do this? What would that step be?
Oh, that's a great question. So I think the best way to get involved is to, you know, watch a commission meeting or watch a council meeting. The other thing I would ask them is, you know, what are they passionate about? Right. Because I think, like, you know, for me, I worked in the, you know, kind of real estate investment, real estate finance industry. And as a result of that, I participated in a number of different trade groups. And I will tell you, one of the things that had the biggest impact on me was being able to participate in sort of the Sacramento and Washington, D.C., you know, sort of fly-in visits where you actually meet with legislators. And what I came to realize was that, you know, it's great that you get so many people from across the political spectrum, Democrat, Republican, you know, left, right, and, you know, you talk to people about the issues and, you know, why, you know, why this issue is important, how it's going to affect your industry and, you know, and ultimately your own, you know, life or business interests. And so I think that's that had just a profound impact on me, I think, as a young professional. I think I was in my early to mid 20s at the time. And that just kind of realized, I realized, you know, hey, this is, you know, this is community service. And these people are helping decide and determine the policies that ultimately are going to govern our industry. And here we have an opportunity not only to, you know, speak with, meet with, and engage with them, but it's our duty, really, because if not, you know, they're hearing either from maybe, you know, maybe from people who might be working against us or other folks in the community. And so I think kind of seeing that process behind the scenes and participating in that, you know, really made me realize, wow, like this is, you know, this is really, this is how the, you know, our democracy works. And we very much have a part in this process, regardless of where we are at, you know, in life. I mean, I was in my 20s at the time, which, you know, I guess I would say made me kind of a kid, right? So, but I think for younger folks looking to get active or engaged, you know, a lot of the scout groups, both Girl Scout and Boy Scouts, actually have programs where, you know, they work on a community program and they're meeting with council members. And so that's something that I'm always happy to, you know, to participate in as well. You know, not just signing and presenting certificates, right? But helping to provide direction and guidance. And that's something that I've been able to do in terms of meeting with, you know, members of the community who have reached out. I make it a point to be very accessible and very available. And typically, you know, somebody reaches out with a question or a concern or an interest, you know, we're able to schedule a meeting, you know, either at City Hall or perhaps for coffee somewhere and kind of talk about those things. Because I do think it's important to be available and to be engaged with the community, because this is very much a service role. And I think part of what we have to do is show people that process, right? And that's always something I'm happy to do.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. So if people want to reach out to you, what would be the best contact information for that?
Well, I'm reachable via phone or text, you know, and my information is public. I'm happy to share it here as well, if that's appropriate. My email is also on the city website, and I can be contacted there as well. And I also have a page on Facebook where I can be, you can reach out to me via my, you know, my council page. So those are really the three ways I think it'll be easiest for somebody to get a hold of me. But, I will say texting is probably the easiest way.
Fantastic. We'll compile all those details and add those in the show notes. So thank you for that. So now I want to get to one of our fun questions that we ask all of our guests on the show, which is, can you please give our listeners a book recommendation?
Oh, man. Just one? That's
I know it's hard.
Hard. Yeah, I guess, gosh, I read a lot. So I was an English major at UCLA, and I guess I just got used to reading like lots of books. And so I typically will read like 2, 3, or 4 books at a time. And I like to, you know, one thing I started doing recently too, that kind of enhanced the process for me, was I started like taking notes, which is, I guess, seems funny, but there's, you know, especially just reading, and I've gotten more interested, like my taste or literary taste has kind of evolved over time. But I really enjoy reading like history. I like detective fiction. I like biographies and things like that. So I guess if I had to give just one book that I like, or one book that I love, is Zorba the Greek by Nikos Kazantzakis. And it's a kind of a older book, you know, written about, a time long ago in Greece, where, you know, basically there was a guy goes to an island in a sense, and, you know, he has this like business venture that he's working on, and things don't quite work out, but, you know, basically Zorba kind of teaches him how to be happy in life. And it's just a great, I think it's a great story that, you know, in a different world today, the message still resonates. So I'd say Zorba the Greek is a good one.
Thank you for the recommendation. I actually went to UCLA for history, so I fully understand getting into the habit of just constant reading.
Yes.
That UCLA definitely gives you that.
It does, so, for sure.
Is there anything else that I haven't mentioned in this interview that you would like our listeners to know about?
You know, I would just say, I mean, kind of in line with our discussion, I think local government is very important. And I think it's really important for people to understand that, you know, this is, local government is not about politics. And, you know, again, it's not about sort of the national rhetoric. Local government is about community service, and it's about fixing potholes, and it's about, you know, public safety, and it's about solving the problems that you face each and every day. And I think so often, and this is always, it's always interesting to me when I'm out knocking on doors and I talk to people and they say, oh, I don't vote for city elections. I only vote for the president or what have you. I'm kind of blown away by that, you know, but you talk to people, adults who vote year after, you know, who vote every 2 years, but they only vote for the president. Right. And, you know, it's like you explain to them, they're like, hey, these are the issues that affect you closest to home, the issues you deal with on a daily basis, and you have a determination in who serves and represents you on the council. And it's important for you to voice your interests based on, you know, I think the candidates that most closely represent those needs and concerns. And so I think it's just, I think it's really important for people to understand that, because so often I think, you know, and especially, you know, with today where there's a sort of idea that, hey, the country is just run by these jaded politicians, you know, that's not the case locally, right? You've got people who, they might disagree with each other at times, you know, might disagree on the issues all the time, but ultimately they're carving out a way to solve problems, whether that's on a 3-2, 4-1, or 5-0 vote, that are going to serve the community. And I will say, I think that's one of the things that I've been most excited about this year, as we've been able to do some great things for the community, you know, recognizing members of our community, celebrating our roots and our history, and then working on, you know, investing in our community. And we've been able to do that on some of those 4-1 and 5-0 votes. So those are things that I'm really grateful for. And I hope that will continue in the years to come.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for those, you know, especially that emphasis on local government and community involvement. So that pretty much rounds it out for me in terms of questions. I really want to thank you, Nick, for being here today and giving us your time and explaining things so well to our listeners. You know, Slice of Orange really is about getting people more involved. And I think that was the essence of this interview. So I especially appreciate that. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So that was Slice of Orange NOC's interview with Mayor Nick Dunlap. For more episodes, please check out Slice of Orange NOC on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We are also on Facebook and Instagram, so be sure to follow us there.